Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. All right. Disappointing. Well, I don't know. It depends what side you're looking at it from. Disappointing 14-13 loss to the Bills on Sunday. Matt Prater missed a late 48-yard field goal. And, you know, I don't know. It wasn't that much of a game to watch. It wasn't very exciting. Not really too much going on. We got a game 15 coming up against the Minnesota Vikings. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. First, we'll start with the injury news, starting with players added to injury reserve. Number one, Kerryon Johnson.
So, yeah, this is a move for the future, right? He injured his knee in week 11 and then against the Panthers, and they thought he had a chance to come back for the season, but at this point with nothing to play for, other than just him getting more experience, which he doesn't need, it makes sense to shut him down.
All right, next up, Deshaun Hand, which you're sad to hear.
Very, and it's the same concept, right? His knee sprain was something they thought he could come back from, but then you shift now to a non-playoff end of the season here, and it just you don't want to further complicate things for another young rookie.
All right, and finally, Jamal Agnew removed from injured reserve and activated the 53-man roster. We'll probably see him play on Sunday.
Yeah, and here's a situation where he doesn't have enough experience, right? With Hand and Johnson, they've started the majority of the year. They've gotten in, you know, at least double-digit games at this point in their career. Whereas Agnew has a lot of experience on special teams, but his first real game action on defense was game 16 last year. And then he started the year, played four games, then was injured. So he's really only played four and a half because he was injured in that fifth game. He's really only played four and a half NFL games on defense. And for a guy who is going to be a critical piece, bringing him back for to get a couple games experience in the system is a move that I think is more to just kind of help him get himself acclimated so that he can go into the next season feeling confident that his knee will hold up and he can get a little bit more experience under the belt to carry with him.
All right, moving on to the players that are out. They're not put on injured reserve. They're just out for the Sunday.
They're not out
of practice.
Correct.
They're not being used in practice.
Correct.
Starting with Damon Snacks Harrison.
Yeah, he was out both Wednesday and Thursday, so this is concerning now that he's been out on Thursday. If he was just getting a Veterans Day rest, that's fine. It still could be Veterans rest because you got to remember he didn't have a bye week. So it's possible that they're just giving him some extended rest. But they also activated John Atkins, who is the other nose tackle on the roster. They elevated him to the active roster. So the fact that they've added him and Harrison's been out, it's raised a few red flags for me. And it is a bit troublesome that he won't be able to go. And with Hand also not being able to go, you're basically probably looking at Ricky Jean-Francois and Ashawn and John Atkins. And you'll probably see Kerry Hyder kick inside on specific plays. But, yeah, it'd be a big blow if Harrison isn't actually able to play.
Very thin defensive line without him. Next up, Charles Washington.
This is a hamstring injury that's been lingering for 2 weeks. I would not be surprised if he sat out again.
Finally, out of the players that were out, Don Muehlbach with his calf. Is that why he had the bad snap on the extra point on Sunday?
No, I don't think it was, and I don't think he said anything like that either. What's concerning about Don is he played in practice in a limited fashion on Wednesday and then didn't practice on Thursday. Now, it is a long snapper's position, so sitting out for a game of practice for a 10-year vet who's been long snapping, you know, for a long, you know, it's very natural for him. He doesn't really need the reps, but it is a little bit concerning that he might miss. If he does, you're now looking.
Yeah, there's no long snapper. Let's go find Jimmy Landis.
Well, but you got to remember they have Frank Ragnow, Graham Glasgow, who are both starters.
They're regular centers, though. They don't know how to long snap.
You have Joe Dahl.
It's very specialized skill.
You have Joe Dahl, who's been a utility guy that they've used in a lot of different facets. And you also promoted Leo Colomatanqui. And if Don's hurting, it's possible that they said, all right, Leo, you're going to have to go, or Dahl, you're going to have to go. And they've been practicing to prepare. But like I said, we don't know. I mean, it's possible he gave it a test and wasn't quite ready, and they said, let's give it a few days and make a decision at game time. My guess is he probably won't practice Friday. He'll be a game time decision. They'll have a backup in either Dahl or Colomatanqui that'll be ready.
I was going to ask who was long snapping in practice. Do we know?
We don't. Yeah. Nope.
Should be hot take. Call into the radio station. Matt Castle's going to long snap. Just kidding. It's ridiculous. All right. Players that were limited in practice, starting with quarterback Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, he said he's not worried about it. He says he's feeling fine. And I've said this for the last 3 weeks. If Jake Rudock gets promoted to the active roster, then Stafford might get some rest. If Jake Rudock does not, expect Stafford to go.
There's going to be a lot of angry callers into the radio station. This is the second radio station mentioned. All right. Next, Devin Kennard.
You know, he was limited last week, played in the game, played well. Now he's limited again. I expect him to go as well.
Kenny Galladay.
Yeah, you know, he took a lot of big falls, right? He sacrificed his body quite a bit.
This is what happens when you're catching all the passes.
Right? And so this, again, just could be a thing where they're kind of giving him some snaps off. But it is mildly concerning because of their lack of skill players on the roster. Be interesting to. I expect him to be questionable. That's kind of my guess. But I also expect him to play.
Bruce Ellington.
Hamstring injury at the same time Washington's was, but apparently his isn't as severe because he's been able to practice, whereas Washington hasn't. If he plays, then it could mean that Powell is out. Powell didn't really do anything to write home about. He had 20 yak yards, yet only had a total of 11 net yards, which means he's getting the ball behind the line
and, scrimmage,
right, and then having to try and make yards out of it. So, but even then, wasn't super productive in his opportunity.
Nick Ballore, but who needs Nick Ballore when you have Joe Dahl playing?
Well, special teams does, right? Really, Ballore's value right now is special teams. Joe Dahl has really done exceedingly well as a fullback. You know what's really going to be interesting is people are going to look at PFF grades in the offseason, and they're going to look at Joe Dahl's grades, which have almost exclusively been at fullback, but they've all been really high. Like, the average grade is like 60 for PFF. Joe Dahl has been scoring in the high 70s and even 90 a couple of times. And so his end-of-year grade is going to be like the best of all the offensive linemen. And people are going to be like, why isn't Joe Dahl playing? He should be the replacement for line. Just because of his production at fullback.
All right, LeGarrette Blount.
Not on the injury report Wednesday, then showed up on Thursday. Mildly concerning, but as we saw in the Buffalo game, it seems like he's now third in the pecking order in the backfield right now.
All right, next we got the guys coming up back practicing full. Sadly, Rick Wagner has returned to practice full time. Although it's good that he's off concussion protocol.
I think Wagner gets a raw deal.
No, I've had enough of him.
I think he's a good player. I think he has his flaws. One of them showing up this weekend.
Yeah, getting eaten alive by Danelle Hunter.
Yeah, and but he's going to play. He now has two full practices, which means he should be ready to go. I think other than Hunter, who seems to be his kryptonite, I think Wagner is a good stable player to have back at right tackle. Even though I'm sad to see Crosby go.
All right, Marcus Cooper returned to practice.
Yeah, with him,
we haven't seen much of him.
Yeah, he played one game, then got hurt. Right. Mm-hmm. He will challenge Tease. One of them will be active. One of them probably will.
How sad.
I mean, that's where it is at this point, unfortunately.
Tease on his way out.
It kind of seems that way for sure, right?
And it seems that all the armchair quarterbacks on draft day may have been right. All right, new players to the squad. You mentioned John Atkins, the nose tackle, filling in, may fill in for Snacks or may just be extra depth.
Yeah, you know, so he played at Georgia last year, and he signed with New England after going undrafted. Then he was released by them at the cutdowns in September, signed with the Lions. He's been with the Lions all year. And this could be just an end-of-the-year type promotion, which happens, at the end of each season, especially when a team is eliminated, where they're trying to sign guys that they want to take with them or have rights to next year. But it could also be that Harrison isn't ready to go, and they need a big body who is familiar to gapping, and Atkins fits the bill.
All right, two players back to the practice squad. Wide receiver, is that Brandon Riley or Brandon Riley?
I'm not sure. There's two L's in it, though.
Yeah, there's two L's, so could be Riley.
I don't know enough about him. He played in Nebraska in 2017, came out. He was a senior. I don't believe he was a starter at Nebraska, but he is a super athlete. I checked out his numbers. They were like out of this world, really good. And they're, giving him a shot over another, they just cut the other athlete, super athlete that they had at receiver. So last week, and so now they're trying another one, just see what they can kick up.
The other practice squad ad is running back Justin Stockton. Maybe no relation to John, we don't know.
No, it's not. I can pretty much guarantee he's not related to him. But he played at Texas Tech. He's a small guy. And
so was John Stock.
but he is I don't think he was, I think even Stockton was like, wasn't like
6'1".
Yeah, I mean, this guy's 5'8". They need another running back, right? They need another practice guy who can come in and with Kerryon out, they need to bring a kind of wily running back in who's got, again, he has good numbers from a workout perspective. They'll try and see if they can uncover some gold with him.
All right. Release from the practice squad, interior offensive lineman, Selese Uhatafe.
Yeah, so he lasted a week.
Yeah, well, it's good that we'll have to maybe not pronounce his name again.
Well, it could be the same thing with...
Still haven't added Bo Nunn. One more week. I got 1 week.
But, at this point of the year, they're just going to be... They're looking to the future with these practice squad guys.
All right, takeaways from the Bills game, as we mentioned before, the 14-13 loss. Number one, Kenny Galladay's career game could have been much bigger than only 146 yards receiving on 7 receptions.
Yeah, I mean, he set his career high in the first half.
Yeah, he broke 100 yards in the first half and was kind of quiet in the second, like the rest of the team.
On 4 catches, right? Mm-hmm. And then they went away from him. You know, they started the first couple series, they double-teamed him, and then they went back to single coverage. And when they double-teamed him, it's almost like they stopped looking his way. And then when they went back to single, they didn't go back to him again until late. I think he had one catch late in the third quarter and then 2 in the fourth. All of them were minimal yards. But I was really disappointed after that first half that he had. I thought for sure he was on his way. I knew no one was going to outdo him, that I already had written the player of the game article at the halftime. Because all of that he had done so much in the first half. I at halftime, I was frantically trying to get everything down on paper, online, so that I could have like it all, so I could get ready for it the second half where I could add more information, and then that was it. I had to add like 2 paragraphs to my article. And it was disappointing because I was expecting something bigger.
Only player on the roster to crack 10 yards per catch, also 12 yards per catch, actually 8 yards per catch. Levi Toilolo, 4 catches, 28 yards. What didn't make your player of the game?
The rest of the team outside of Galladay had 62 yards receiving.
Yeah, well, that's impressively bad.
That's really bad.
All right, LeGarrette Blount seems on his way out.
So Zenner got the start. Zenner saw 26 snaps. Theo Riddick saw 25. LeGarrette Blount saw 11. So there was a big shift here towards Zach Zenner. And when they went to Zenner, they like him as a pass blocker. So what we saw from him is 26 snaps, but 10 touches. Same thing with Theo, 25 snaps, 10 touches. But with Blunt, he had 7 touches on 11 snaps.
He's getting
snaps.
The ball when he gets in the game.
That's the thing, and people are going to pick up on that, right? And so I feel like he's being phased out. He's got a couple of games left, and I honestly don't think he would be back, no matter how buddy-buddy he is with Patricia.
He could go back to New England. They'll find a spot.
Well, yeah, I don't think Bob Quinn will stand for it.
All right, Darius Slay, back to 3 pass breakup games.
Yeah, back to back. He had 3 pass deflections in Arizona, and then he had another 3 here against the Bills. So,
and he's a Pro Bowler.
Yep.
He still has to get to the end of the line at Hungry Howie's, though.
Diggs was the alternate to the Pro Bowl, too, as a side note there. We don't spend too much time talking about Pro Bowls and top 100s on this podcast. If for those new listeners who haven't heard us in the off season, you know, tend to be popularity contests that we don't put a whole lot of stock into. But it's nice of him to get the acknowledgement because of that Pro Bowl nod. He actually hits a qualifier, gets another $500,000 in his contract, so that's nice for Slay. But you know, he's had an up and down season, but he's looked better the last couple. That's for sure.
Yeah, he's played better, and that pass defense is still one of the top 10 in the NFL, I believe. Or now is in the top 10. I'll have to look that up. Tracy Walker was number 3 graded Lions defender and number 1 among special teamers.
Yeah.
We see a lot more Tracy Walker out there during these games, or at least if he's out there about the same amount of time, he's making more noise.
Yeah, you know, 2 games ago, he saw an equal number of snaps to Glover Quinn. Last game, Glover out-snapped him, but Tracy's still ahead of Tavon Wilson, so he's the clear number 3. And when he is out there, like you said, he is making noise. So it's another encouraging sign for the future, because at this point right now, with the Lions being eliminated from the playoffs, you're really looking at these guys from an evaluation standpoint. And you're seeing nice things out of Tracy Walker that that give you some good encouraging signs that if Glover Quinn retires, that Tracy should be able to step in and play. Although what we have seen recently is Diggs playing more free safety and Tracy Walker in the slot, which is actually where I like him a bit more anyway. So, and regardless, he'll probably be a full-time player, and it's nice to see that he's scoring well outside of just those few snaps, and he's doing it on a more consistent basis now.
I have to apologize. The Lions' pass defense is ranked number 11 in the NFL.
Okay.
Matt Prater, as I mentioned at the top of the show, missed the 48-yard field goal, which would have proved to be the game winner. Maybe, maybe not. History would change after that moment if he had made it.
Well, right. And remember, they missed the extra point.
Yeah, well, they missed the extra point.
Right.
But if he nailed the field goal, all would have been forgiven.
Right.
First one, he's missed. It says game tire / game winner. Is that just as a Lion, or is that ever?
As a player.
Even in college?
I don't know.
We don't go back that far?
I don't know.
That's something.
As a pro, he has never missed a game winner until today.
Yeah, I wasn't up. You know, like
Sunday.
And I kind of sit in a slightly different universe than you do when it comes to the Lions losing, and how I do understand why you'd want to see the team win. I'm fine if they lose because you know they're not going anywhere anyways. I actually think sometimes at this point in the season when they have a nice impressive win, it's more upsetting because they could have been playing like, why couldn't they do this all year? You know,
sure.
Type of thing.
Sure.
And, there was no ire at Prater. I don't think even
no.
in
you
town
know
there was ire against him. Like, yeah, he missed the field goal. You know, like he doesn't miss a lot of them and he got a pass and, you know, we're not as terrible as we think. We gave a guy like Matt Prater a pass.
He hasn't missed a fourth quarter field goal in like 3 years or something like that, right? But, yeah, I mean, people aren't, look.
Plus, a lot of people want to see the team lose. So,
right. I mean, people aren't going to get
that's win-win for them.
He has a track record that shows that was an anomaly. And again, from an evaluation standpoint, it's not something you expect to repeat itself in the future. So you're still pretty confident in your kicker moving forward.
It was always my I don't know, not a concern or a fear, but I always thought that, you know, in Hansen's career, they would finally make it to the playoffs,
right.
And they'd finally be in a big game, and he'd miss that big kick, and it would be so devastating. You know, like, oh, he finally gets his chance, and he misses, you know.
Right.
It would just be a stroke of luck type thing. All right, let's move on. Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
We play on Sunday. Lions not favored again. Although this is only 2 weeks in a row, because they were favored in Arizona, right? Or weren't they?
They were.
Yeah. And then, but now they're 5.5-point underdogs at home, telling you how much faith Vegas has in them. Walt Anderson's going to be in the referee. 14.46 penalties per game. NFL average is now up to 13.51. That's three or four games in a row where we've had referees over average.
It's been several, yeah.
Yeah, after the big chunk of the first half of the year.
When they were low.
Under.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you listen to that interview they had with Ed Hockley the other week, I don't know if you heard that.
No.
Another podcast, maybe they shouldn't be mentioned. They interviewed Ed Hockley, and he was talking about how he would call more penalties. You know, if he could, he'd rather call more than less. Or, you know, under the guise of player safety, quote unquote.
Okay.
Broadcast team, we get one of the worst in the business, Chris Myers and Daryl Johnston.
Can't be worse than what we've had the last
week. Yeah, we've been bad the last couple weeks, but we're going to get the crummy teams at this point. We're not going anywhere, so why should we get a good crew?
Next week against the Packers is going to be probably even worse, you know what I mean?
Like, it'll be Brando and Quinn again.
Oh, God.
We'll see. It's not going to be Spielman. They'll stick him with a good game.
Yep.
All right, last time they played, Vikings won 24-9.
Yeah, so we're going to change it up a little bit, how we evaluate the team. We're not going to go into the player-by-player, position-by-position type thing. We'll just talk about how it's different. What do we need to watch out for, and what's changed, I guess, over the last several weeks.
All right, so all about the Vikings defense in that game. They had 10 sacks.
17 quarterback hits. Yep.
Because of that game, they remain the number one team in sacks in the NFL with 47, up on, I think, Kansas City by one. Whoever's in second has 46. Mm-hmm. So you take out those 10, they only have 37 in 14 or 13 games, you know, which is right about where the Lions are at. I think the Lions have 38 in 14 games. And we didn't score at all. Just
we didn't score any touchdowns. Yeah,
yeah. Well, yeah, we didn't get any majors.
Correct.
We got a few minors. We saw some action out of Theo Riddick. Are we going to see that again?
I mean, I would think so. I would think that they would utilize the passing game as much as they can, just because the Vikings are so aggressive up front that you need to kind of catch them, working against themselves essentially, right? And so, in order to offset the speed, you do some draw plays, you do some leak outs, screen plays, etc. Draw plays are going to be hard. I think they're too good right now, up the middle and at the edges. That draw plays probably aren't going to work with the personnel that they have. So, yeah, I'm expecting them to try and utilize Riddick in the air. And I think you can use Zetter in this fashion as well.
All right, so Kenny Galladay was productive. When the team went his way, last time they played.
Yeah, and it's the same thing like as we saw last week. When you throw at Kenny, you get good things. But they didn't throw at Kenny a whole lot that game, and he went 3 for 46. But when you are throwing at him, it's working. So if he's okay and he's able to play, I really think peppering Galladay is a way to kind of open up the Vikings defense.
Is it worth noting that in that game, Marvin Jones had 6 receptions for 66 yards? I believe Golden Tate was already gone by this game. This might have been the first game they played after he was traded. This is back on November 4th, so yeah, that would be after
Seattle.
After Seattle would be after the trade deadline, which would be right around
Halloween. If it was after Seattle, Seattle was his last game.
Yeah, Seattle was the previous game to them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, how do you feel about that? Like, when you look at the Minnesota defense, they're going to be running Trey Waynes out there and Marcus Sherrills. Like, who's going to defend? And Xavier Rhodes. Who's going to defend against Galladay? What are we going to see out of Galladay?
I
the number one guy, who was probably facing up with Marvin Jones.
Last time it was Waynes. They put Waynes on Galladay, and it's a size matchup thing, right? And they could option to do that again, try and do size. If they do, there's some opportunity for Galladay to do well. Rhodes has actually had a kind of a down year, and so I wouldn't be surprised if they stuck with the more physical Trey Waynes on him.
All right, Dalvin Cook had one big run and was held in check the rest of the day. What were we going to see if Damon Harrison doesn't play?
Yeah, if Damon Harrison doesn't play, then it's going to be bad news. There's going to be some gaps opening in the middle, but some big potential runs will be there. If they can, the thing with Harrison is that it's not just Harrison himself. It's how he makes the people around him better. A'shaun was not very good at the beginning of the year. And then all of a sudden Harrison shows up, and now all of a sudden A'shaun looks like a Pro Bowler, right? And so if you remove Harrison from this equation, how does A'shaun respond to that? Can he step up and be the number one guy, or will he buckle like he has in the past when he is the feature? I think it's a problem area, and potentially a big problem area, even though they've been doing so well against the run since the acquisition of Harrison.
All right, Adam Thielen had a streak of 100-yard games. It was snapped, only was held to 22 yards receiving. He's looked rather crummy in the last couple of games, too.
He was covered by Lawson mostly that game, right? And mm-hmm. Now with Agnew back, I'm thinking Agnew might end up getting matched. That's kind of a nice welcome back for Agnew to put him right at the end, right? But we could see Lawson there again. It's going to be interesting to see, because I don't know if you can use a trio of Slay, Agnew, and Lawson on the field at the same time, and just those guys. Just because if you have Lawson covering the slot, you can't really have Agnew on the outside. Which means if you're going to match Lawson up on Thielen, then you might be turning back to Mike Ford on the outside.
All right, finally, Darius Slay had an interception last time they played.
Yeah, he was playing off. He mostly
one of the six on the season for the Lions.
And he was covering, the big wide receiver out of Ole Miss that they drafted.
Laquan Treadwell.
Thank you. He covered Treadwell, and he did his normal ball hawking Darius Slay self, got a pick. And like I said, he's been streaking lately, so I don't think he'll cover Thielen, though. I think he'll be somewhere else. Might even draw Diggs in this one.
All right. The Vikings come into this game with a 7-6-1 record. Currently hold the sixth playoff spot in the NFC. They would face the Chicago Bears in Chicago if the season
Vikings,
ended today.
Is it the Vikings or the Eagles that have the six?
I thought the Eagles are at 7-7, I believe.
Okay.
And not 7-6-1.
Okay. So no, that's fine. I just couldn't recall.
The Eagles are on the outside looking in.
Okay.
So what's happened with the Vikings since they last played?
Well, the Lions could play spoiler here, right? If they want to ruin the Vikings season, handing them a loss would be pretty bad because it would take them out of the sixth spot, theoretically, right? So if for those people who are looking for the what do you want to play for other than just player evaluation, if you want to play the spoiler, here's your chance, right?
Yep.
So in the last few meetings or the last few games that the Vikings have had, they went out. They since they played the Lions, they lost to Chicago after they beat the Lions, and they beat Green Bay, lost to New England, lost to Seattle. Then they fired their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, he was the scapegoat after the Seattle game. It wasn't Kirk Cousins. It was John DeFilippo.
And they replaced him with the quarterback's coach, Kevin Stefanski. He went in as the offensive coordinator into Miami, and they put a beatdown on Miami. Actually, it was in Minnesota, but they played Miami, and they won 41-17. The reason they wanted to shift away from DeFilippo is they said that he wasn't running a balanced enough offense. They wanted to have more emphasis on the run. And under DeFilippo, they were averaging around 80 yards a game, which was not really at the level that they wanted.
It's probably near the bottom of the league.
Right. And so now you replace him with Stefanski, you play Miami, and Dalvin Cook ends up going for 20 touches, 163 yards, two touchdowns. The team rushes for 220 as a total. Dalvin Cook wins NFC Offensive Player of the Week. But the little asterisk in that is the Dolphins have the second worst run defense in the league. So is it a Dolphins run D that just allowed them to gash them? Or is there a real shift in how the offense is being called? Is Stefanovski that much different than DeFilippo that he's sticking with the run game? To me, what I saw, I thought they looked more sparked.
Ready to respond.
No, yeah. So they've got, I think they've got life, and I think that, you know, a change is what this team needed in order to take the next step, and we'll see what happens with this.
Not a real balanced attack when they run the ball 40 times and only pass 21 times, right. But that's what you want. If you're doing that, you're most likely winning. There's not a lot of teams losing. They're going to put up that type of balanced running and passing. They did outrush. They did rush for more yards, and they passed 220 to 215, but that's about as balanced as it gets.
Yep.
All right, you mentioned, did you mention that Dalvin Cook is the NFC Offensive Player of the Week? You did mention his stats.
Yes.
The Lions run defense with Damon Harrison, we learned during the Buffalo game, is 79.2 yards per game, which is second in the NFL during that span of time. And before, we all knew how bad they were, because I think we mentioned it in every episode
earlier. Yeah, they were 31st in the league. They had the Miami Dolphins spot. So if no Harrison and they revert back, I mean, granted, there's a learning curve that goes along with this, but if you lose Harrison and you don't have Deshaun Hand, and you could end up seeing the Vikings put up a couple hundred yards, and I don't think that would be a shock either. Now, I do think there is a dedication to the run. I do think there is a pride in the Lions trying to stop the run right now that wasn't there at the beginning of the year. But Harrison is such a catalyst in that, in their success. Losing him would be a really big blow.
All right. I'm going to do a little math guessing here.
Okay.
With Damon Harrison, second in the NFL defensively, mm-hmm, against the run. Without him, 31st defensively against the run. Where are they overall?
Let's see, like 12, right?
16.
Yeah.
Right, oh, in, the 12, yeah, in the middle, yeah, of those two numbers.
Yeah. Right. You know, you got to remember, they got gashed in the first two games.
Oh, yeah. It was bad.
They were
really bad.
After the San Fran game, they had given up like 200 yards more than any other team in the league. For them to have to come back from that far down, they're never going to get as far up as they probably are deserving with the impact Harrison has made.
All right, injury-wise, from a month and a half ago to this Sunday, no Stephon Diggs, no Xavier Rhodes, no Anthony Barr. They're all back, which is bad news for the Lions.
Yeah, they also didn't have Sendejo, and they won't have him again as he's on IR.
All right, so the current injury report, they do have a couple of names that are worth mentioning, besides Chad Beebe, Don Beebe's son.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw his name on there, I was like, oh, didn't he like gash us a couple of times? He had 3 receptions for 21 yards, but I mean, that was...
It's enough for Eric to remember.
Yeah, right. They were key times, I guess. My guy, David Morgan, who I was a big fan of in the draft prep a couple years
back. You had the chance to interview him.
Yeah, I did. We had a nice connection in Texas there. And, you know, I think he's been playing better lately. He's probably going to be their tight end one next year. So, I think they're hoping to get him back for this stretch run for them.
Guard Mike Remmers, linebacker Eric Kendricks, both starters.
Yeah, Kendricks is a good run defender too. So if you lose Kendricks, and I believe he's out Wednesday and Thursday, that would leave a little bit of a hole. Now, Barr has not been the player he was prior. So if they are missing Kendricks and Barr hasn't been living up to his potential, the weakness in this Vikings defense is that linebacker level. And the way you take advantage of that is, as we mentioned earlier, the quick passes out there to Theo Riddick and Zach Zenner, and then maybe even some slot receivers.
Finally, long snapper Kevin McDermott.
Again, it's a long snapper, same situation.
Don't underestimate the long snapper.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, it could just be... I mean, I believe he was limited, so we'll see how it goes. Interesting, though, that both teams' long snappers are injured.
And don't forget, the Vikings have the ever-dangerous Amir Abdullah on the roster.
So he's been active for them 5 games. He has not run the ball once. He has 1 reception for 10 yards. But where he's really been valuable is as a kick returner. He's returned 8 kicks. Each of them have gone for almost 30 yards. So he averages just under 30 yards a kick return. And my guess is back in Ford Field, They're going to put him out at kick returner, and they're going to say, try and house one, and he's going to be motivated. But I don't expect him, unless it's a significant lead, to be a guy getting touches out of the backfield.
All right. Here we go. This is the portion of the show where we pick the game. I lead 8-6, and I'm staring at finishing 8-8 in the face, just like last season, making this whole process moot over the last 2 years. And I believe did I win the last game?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get because of the low. I went low.
Your score was within 4 points total. You were almost on it.
I'm going to give you a chance this week.
Good.
Because I'm going to pick the Vikings to cover and cover impressively. Vikings 28, Lions 14.
Ugh. I'm going to go under you.
Yeah, you should. I mean, that's a smart move.
I'm going to say, you said 28-14.
28-14. I'm giving you a sporting chance.
I don't think the Lions score 10. I think the Lions will score 10.
All right.
So if I'm playing this smart, I just say, 27, right?
Yeah, and then yeah, that's basically then the under.
But technically, I'm 4 points away, so I got to play the points. I'm going to say 24-10 Vikings, even though now I'm worried I might have gone too low on the Vikings score. I don't think this is going to be as close as that. I think two scores is could get away from
Harrison's the big thing is Harrison. If Harrison doesn't play, they're going to get eaten alive.
It could go bad quick.
Yeah.
I
we'll see. Maybe most of the team has quit.
I don't think that's true. I don't think the team has quit. Stafford spoke to the media today, and he talked about wanting to play. And he
wants to keep the starting streak alive.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's a starting streak. I think he talked about wanting to play for his teammates. And, you know, we've talked in the past about there's an evaluation process, and he allows you to evaluate the skill players that you have. And even though these skill players that are left are probably back into the roster, it'll at least tell you where they are. There's a pride sense of this too, trying to get the team going in the right direction. But he's also been nursing a back injury for 3 weeks. And if he gets injured in this one,
who even knows anybody will react to this one?
I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't finish the game. And I also wouldn't be surprised if Jake Ruduck was activated on Saturday just in case. But, you know, he's gonna play. He's going to start. I think he's going to give it his all. He's going to give 100%. There's no doubt in that. I just don't know. These guys are so beat up as a team. And everything is trending in the wrong direction. And with the Vikings, it's trending in the right direction. Then they have things to play for. And so my concern is, I just don't want him to get injured. That's the bottom line, right?
All right, let's go over to the podcast questions. First one's from Gary Luke. It's a good one. Kerry Hyder, did he underachieve in 2018, or was he only ever going to be a fringe player? It seemed that a lot of fans spent 2017 lamenting his injury and hoping his return could make a positive impact, which ultimately didn't materialize.
Yeah, I think there's two factors. But I definitely do think he underachieved in 2018. But I don't think that he's built to really succeed in this defense. When he had his success in 2016, it was as a 4-3 defensive end in an aggressive scheme where he's able to get up the field quickly. In this scheme, he's asked to hold his gap. And that's something that, while he's done in the past, he's never really shined. When he played for the Jets, he never really shined in that system. That's why he ended up leaving. And when he got into a 4-3, and Austin's 4-3, that more aggressive, it was more naturally suited to him. I don't think he really fits in place here. His best role here is as an interior situational pass rusher. And really, the only reason he's seen the field in that role is because Deshaun Hand is on IR. Even though he's a restricted free agent this year, I would be surprised if they were willing to give him.
Won't match the offer.
I don't even know if they'd give him an original round tender, which is undrafted, where someone could just pay his tender and then they get him. But it's $1.7 million. I don't think they would pay him $1.7 million to come back in the role that he's playing right now. So did he underachieve? Yes, I believe he did.
Not entirely his fault, though, according to your synopsis.
I don't think he fits well, but There was also a change in him behind the scenes that I don't want to like speak poorly of him, but I do think there's probably some things going on that don't line up quite right. That really have he just does. I don't think he feels comfortable in this situation.
Sean Sweeney, is Wagner done in Detroit after the season, or will we see Crosby at right guard next year? Crosby is too talented not to start.
You know, one of the things that Bob Quinn said was that he wants to build depth, right?
And if he got to have depth,
yep.
Look what's happening to the Rams right now.
Well, look at anybody, right? I mean, like, the only reason that the Lions were competitive the last 2 weeks, if you can call them that, Chiefs are like looking pretty rough right now, right? But the only reason is that the Lions are even mildly can field a team is because they have enough depth to put guys out on the field that at least know the scheme, right? Now, they're not overly impressive, and there's struggles all across the board here and there, but, I mean, almost half the team is on IR at this point, which is really incredible. But I don't think Wagner goes away. I think Wagner he's more appreciated by the coaches than he is by the fans. I do think Crosby's too talented, but I think Crosby will get that shot at right guard when he has more time to acclimate to it. I do think Crosby could be their right guard. If they do cut Wagner, it'll be because they think Crosby has the chops to play right tackle every play, moving forward. And Wagner's contract is just too high. He's going to have one of the top, I think, five, maybe even top three contracts next year.
Sean Claver, with one season effectively in the bag, should Lions fans be optimistic with what they've seen from Matt Patricia? The defense has gotten much better while our offense has become incompetent.
You know, as the optimist and the guy that's always looking for the glass half full, I do think that there are things that you can walk away from this season being optimistic about. I do think there are plenty of things that make him look like he's not as good of a coach as we thought he might be. In-game play calling, but you can attribute that to him being a rookie coach.
Clock management.
Well, that's right. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just like in-game decision-making on play calls.
Yeah, everything.
Challenging.
His challenges haven't been bad that day, I don't think.
Well, he only had one bad one. I guess they really can't fault him for having one bad one.
Yeah. But I do...
Game management, the clock has been awful, and it hasn't gotten better. It's frightening.
Well, Caldwell was a 30-year coach, and his clock management... They had to hire...
Yeah, but we knew that.
But they had to hire somebody to do it for him.
Well, and they're going to have to do it again.
And they still couldn't do it. Anyway.
We knew what we were getting in Caldwell.
There are...
I was comfortable with Jim Caldwell. I knew it was going to go wrong.
Well, that's the thing, is that there was
they
stuff
were
going to
be unprepared here and there for a game.
I look, in my optimistic point of view, though, you've seen the change when you get the right players in the scheme, how it can change overnight. We talked in the offseason about the nose tackle being the critical piece to make this defense flow, and if Sly Williams couldn't do it and Ashawn couldn't do it, that the defense was going to struggle, and they did. They needed a guy like Snacks, and when they acquired him, it was like a transformation of the front seven, and they improved so massively by getting the right players in. And switching from a 4-3 to this multiple scheme, as much as they don't want to call it a rebuild, you were completely rebuilding this defense. So they're starting to get guys in place. You give them another offseason to add defenders in place, then yes, there's reasons to be optimistic. As far as the offense, you've got to add some skill players. You got to get a new play caller in there. But there are talented guys if you are putting them in the right situation on offense. It's just a matter of getting them that non-predictable and more aggressive play calling that suits Stafford better. So there is reasons to be optimistic moving forward for sure.
All right, Jimmy, I know I'm in the minority, but I actually feel good, really good, about our core players for next year. I don't know if you're in the minority, but I see what he's talking about in a minute here.
Sure.
Snacks, Slade, Diggs on defense, and Stafford,
Kerryon and Galladay on offense.
Marvin, too. Don't forget him.
Well, he didn't mention
it. I know. I'm just adding it.
Draft and free agency can make us dangerous next year. Ugh. Without the injury bug biting us. The injury bug's always going to bite us. It's the NFL. Explain to me why I'm wrong. Well, you're going to have to handle this question because you handle most of the questions. But my answer's too spiritual to really count, you know. Explain to me why I'm wrong. Well, there's a curse. There's a curse. Go ahead. You're going to be optimistic.
I am, and I don't think Jimmy's wrong. As I just talked about with Sean's question, is I think that there are core pieces in place, and you can build around them. And it's going to take time whenever you switch schemes, but I think that there are some nice pieces in place. If Bob Quinn can go into the draft, draft six guys, one of them goes on IR, and the other five fit, and four of them are starting by the second season, three of them started in the first season, he can replicate that, right? And it's just a matter of you got to remember, when Quinn was drafting for Austin, he had spent 15 years in New England drafting guys for New England style. And when he tried to adjust to Austin's and Caldwell style, he didn't find the right guys to plug into the right spots. He gets into a system that with Patricia that he's spent 15 years operating out of. He knows what to look for. He knows the type of guys to find. And he plucked guys out of the draft, and three of them started, and another one will start next year. Maybe two will start next year. You might end up having five guys out of this draft class start.
All right, Hail Mary.
He's got one more.
Jim's got one more question. Do you think Tate's stock has gone up or down in Philly? I'd say down, but obviously the season isn't over for the Birds yet. But if a stock stays like it is, do you think the Lions have a good shot at signing him next season?
I think his stock has gone down because he hasn't had the same success in Philly he had in Detroit. In Detroit, it was really custom-made for him. And I do think that bringing him back to Detroit would be a great marriage. But there's a cost problem that I don't think will make it happen. I don't think he will be willing to take the discount that the Lions will command. And that's why I still don't think he will return to Detroit. I think he will find another team that's willing to pay him a lot more than Detroit is. But I do think his stock has taken a bit of a hit. Because he's not playing at as high of a level as he did here.
Hail Mary's question. The Lions have more cap space to work with and have some key players signed to contracts. Which positions do you think will be filled through free agency and which through the draft?
So we've talked about this approach to the offseason a few times, and the key thing is they're going to try and field an entire team in free agency that they can put on the field in day one. And then they will use the draft to supplement that, right? They'll probably only expect their first-round draft pick to start, and everyone after that they'll expect to play a role, which means they need to find players in free agency that can plug holes, right? So just kind of like looking at the offense, right? You're going to need a reserve quarterback. You're going to need someone, and they might even have to draft a guy, but they're going to have to bring in at least one guy. Maybe it's re-sign Rudock and a veteran. Maybe it's draft a guy. They're going to have to make moves at the backup quarterback. Kerryon is injured, and you didn't have the success that you wanted out of your other backs, which means you're going to be looking to add another back. And this not just a complement back, like an actual legit back that can run a two-back system with Kerryons. At tight end, you're probably going to need a starter. At the receivers, you're going to need a slot guy, probably not as much on the outside. On the offensive line, you could need a guard, or it could be Crosby. But either way, you're going to need some depth behind them because you got a lot of offensive linemen on expiring contracts next year. So the draft, you're always looking ahead. So don't be surprised if they draft an interior offensive lineman to prepare for the future. On the defense, it's even larger. You need a starting edge. You might need a starting cornerback. You might want to upgrade your linebackers. Depending on what you think of Tavon Wilson, is he capable of being a third safety, which I don't think they believed he is this year. It means you're probably looking to upgrade your safety spot. You're going to need your defensive line looks good outside of that ed, that down defensive end. But you have, if you're bringing Akwara back, you really need a guy that can complement with him. So I mean, it just there's going to be a, they're probably still going to sign a guy in free agency at most of these spots. There's a, the point is you can basically look at almost every spot on the roster and say they could upgrade a depth. Or they could try and upgrade the starter almost everywhere. The key ones are going to be defense because there's actual there's going to be very clear starting holes that they need to fill. And as we just talked about, it's a new scheme where you're trying to get the right defensive players into the system. If you get the right guys, you can have success. And right now, not all the guys fit perfectly. So there's going to be a lot of attention on defense. There's going to be a lot of potential on the offensive skill positions as well. But they're really going to need help in a lot of areas.
BZ Ski, who would be your number one realistic targets in free agency on offense and defense? Mine would be Landon Collins. We would like to play three safeties, and he'd fit that. And wide receiver Adam Humphries.
I still think Trey Flowers, the defensive end, makes a ton of sense because he has found a lot of success in Matt Patricia's system in the past if he's able to leave New England. I don't really have an offensive guy that's standing out to me right now.
Also, who do you think would have a bigger impact on our defense from the draft? Rashawn Gary, Josh Allen, Devin White, or cornerback? He would not personally take a cornerback in round one.
I have Josh Allen at the top of all of those guys. He would be very dynamic, and he would alter that defense.
The defensive end from Kentucky.
The outside linebacker.
The edge rusher from Kentucky.
He would be, it would give them two jack linebackers that could really be something special on defense.
All right, Brandon Kerr, the question that now everybody's going to want to answer to is this. What is the lowest the Lions can do in draft position and the highest?
You know, technically, they still have a shot at the first and second overall pick, but it's less than a 1% chance.
They won't get it. They have five wins.
And then when you go up from there, you get in the best range is at five. You have a 12% chance. And then you're in double-digit percent chances at six, seven, eight, nine. And where you all have a double-digit chance percentage of getting there.
Falls off precipitously at number 10.
Yep, and then at 16, it's less than 1. So you're basically looking at between 5 and 15, and more realistically between 5 and 9.
Samson 2 on Mixer, this will be our final question. Next season, can you guys go to 2 episodes a week? Maybe break down previous week in great detail, and then the second show is a quote-unquote preview of the upcoming game. The world needs more of you two.
Well,
that's very flattering.
I love the compliment, and Joe and I have talked about this, but our lives outside of this often preclude us from being able to do this more than once a week right now.
Maybe one day,
yeah,
but not right now.
Yeah, it could be something, you know, we look into, but at this point, it'd be tough. But the nice thing is that we've got, 9 months to contemplate this before we get into the situation.
Sure, before the next season rolls around. Anything can happen by then.
Yeah.
We'll have to see what's going on. So we have we don't have any reviews.
No, that was a nice
one. We had a few more 5-star votes or whatever it is. Rate the shows.
Yeah, ratings. Yeah. Cool. I mean, that review that Samson said something.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
So I appreciate that. We're not going to get reviews every week. We get that. So we're okay. You know, we know it's a tough time to want to listen to podcasts when the team's losing.
Yeah, but the team's done.
We can
stick a fork in them.
We can encourage you to come back to us because the off season is really, I think.
Oh, this is Eric's wheelhouse, is the off season. He's big into the draft, and this is probably why we're here to begin with.
Yeah. I mean, really, this is where I got my start doing the off season stuff. So we'll have plenty of fun stuff to talk about, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more questions that I'll have more thorough answers to about the offseason in the next couple of weeks.
All right, so that's it for us this time. So until next time, let's go Lions, kind of. You know, draft position, sorry.